11 tumultuous weeks after Pearl Harbor, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed Executive Order 9066. That was on February 19, 1942, an act that authorized the U.S. Army to undertake the rapid removal of more than 100,000 Japanese and Japanese Americans from the West Coast. With only a few weeks and sometimes only a few days' notice, families were forced to abandon their homes under military escort, be removed to remote and hastily erected compounds, including Manzanar War Relocation Center in the California desert. Children of Manzanar captures the experiences of nearly 4,000 children and young adults held at Manzanar during World War II. Quotes from these children, most now in their 80s and 90s, are accompanied by photographs from both official and unofficial photographers, including Ansel Adams, Dorothea Lange, Toyo Miyatake, himself an attorney who for months secretly documented daily life inside the camp before he was allowed to do so openly. The year 2012 marks the 70th anniversary of Executive Order 9066, and Children of Manzanar serves as a very personal view of this bleak chapter in American history when Japanese bloodlines overshadowed American birthrights. It is a moving account of the battle between oppression and the strength of the human spirit. Just on the side, only some Germans and Italians were taken out of circulation, but all the Japanese were.
Correct.
Heather, let me give you an introduction. You grew up in the Pacific Northwest, not too far from the Bellevue blueberry fields that Japanese American families had to abandon when they were removed from the West Coast during World War II. After graduating from Stanford University with a degree in American Studies, Lindquist discovered a love of exhibit planning and writing while serving as an intern at the Smithsonian's Institution's National Museum of American History. Later applying this experience to developing interpretive exhibits for Manzanar National Historic Site and other National Park Service venues. Heather Lindquist collaborates with her husband, Mark Lindquist, in their media production and exhibit planning company, Harvest Moon Studio. She is a contributing author to Freedom in My Heart, edited by Cynthia Jacobs Carter, and published by the U.S. National Slavery Museum in association with National Geographic. She lives in Los Angeles, where she is right now, on the phone with us. So once again, welcome.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Well, you grew up in the Pacific Northwest, not far from the agricultural properties the Japanese had to abandon in the spring of 42. When did you first become aware of the Japanese detention that took place in that year?
Well, my father served in World War II, and he went to Garfield High School in Seattle, and he always talked about friends of his who disappeared rather rapidly, just a matter of days. Seattle had Bainbridge Island, which was a strategic location, much like Terminal Island here, and so I think it hit Seattle as rapidly and precipitously as it did many neighborhoods in L.A. And he told me about a friend who was sent to Tule Lake. And as a kid, I didn't know what Tule Lake was, but it sounded dreadful. And that stuck with me. And then as I grew up, he was careful to point out that my high school, Bellevue High, wasn't very far from what had once been truck farms and blueberry fields and lands that were managed by Japanese American families. And so that thread stuck with me. And then later, working for the Park Service, I had a chance to work on the POW Museum at Andersonville, which is, of course, the site of the Civil War POW camp. And in doing that, I learned about civilian internees, Americans, among others, British, but in the Philippines during World War II who were held in camps. And I thought, well, okay, I'm going to talk about other American citizens who were interned here on American soil. And, of course, I couldn't quite do that in the POW Museum, but at that time the Park Service already knew that Manzanar was going to come into being. And so that planted the seed for me to then try to work on that.
Well, tell us about the work that led you to the Manzanar Historical Site and how you decided to do this book.
Well, learning that our government did imprison citizens for me was a shocking discovery. It's something I knew. I'd been exposed to it. I think growing up on the West Coast, sometimes we learn about it more readily than folks in the Midwest or East Coast. So I knew it happened. And as I was working on the POW Museum, I became really interested in these events where the sort of soul and the human spirit is laid bare. And when I was working as a contractor and had a chance to become part of a team and work on the exhibits at Manzanar, it was something I couldn't turn down. And there was so much learning from former internees and the National Park Service people who are really kind of the keepers of the flame of that particular story. At times I felt, you know, a Caucasian girl, what the heck, you know, what was I doing here? But on the other hand, it's such a human story, so compelling. I couldn't really look away.
The book is copyrighted by the Manzanar Historical Association and published by Heyday Books. Tell us how this collaboration happened.
Well, the first director of the Manzanar History Association. So often, you know, Park Service sites have a cooperating entity that runs the bookstore. And in this case, the people who established the park at Manzanar really wanted an independent, dedicated nonprofit, and that's the Manzanar History Association. And the first director, Mary Vasilka, who unfortunately is no longer with us, was so struck by the photographs of children in the exhibits at the in the interpretive center, the visitor center there. There's something so astonishing to think that we put 4,000 children with their parents, of course, and siblings. And it became her vision to do a book about the experience of children, because it was unique from the parents. And her successors carried the torch, and then Malcolm Margolin at Heyday stepped up and helped make the publication possible. It's a joint effort. So it was a seed that got planted about 10 years ago, and I'm sort of at the end of the line, lucky enough to get a chance to work on it by way of knowing the folks up at Manzanar from the exhibit experience.
And kudos to Heyday and to Malcolm for publishing so many great books, including this one. This is Memorial Day, of course, and I have my own confused feelings about Memorial Day. I was a Navy midshipman at Cal for 3 years before I dropped out of the program in the early 60s, realizing that that was a bad war and I didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly as a child, I was swept up in all of the glory of warfare and believed wholeheartedly in the heroes and heroines that had fought battles and for this country. Things have changed a lot. I've gotten older. I don't feel the same way now about people who go off to war. I feel like they just haven't thought it through. And unfortunately, they're usually sort of guinea pigs in this situation that is controlled by other forces. But this seemed to be a perfect day to me to do a book about Manzanar, Memorial Day, and we are talking about one of the other side effects of war that was not really talked about very, very much back then. It was kind of, I guess we were embarrassed in some ways about what we'd done, especially after we released these people and they had to come back to a world that had completely changed from the ones they left behind, their businesses, their bank accounts. All of these things had been taken from them. So kudos to the Manzanar Historical Association and the work that they've done in helping us remember these things. What besides photographs does the association have in its collection?
Well, the Manzanar National Park has an amazing, so there's sort of two entities. There's the nonprofit operating association that runs the retail and bookstore, and proceeds from that are then rolled back into educational programs. Manzanar itself is a National Park Service site, and they have an incredible ongoing oral history program that's run in concert with DINSHO, which has offers a lot of the archives online. That's a Seattle organization. And the folks at Manzanar have something more than 300 oral histories now, and those are available. Many of them are online. And artifacts, you know, I went to the Manzanar Pilgrimage, which is an annual event now starting back in the late 60s. And as one visitor said, you know, the the items are coming home. You know, there are jacks and toy soldiers, and some of there's photographs of some of these in the book, and personal belongings and photographs, of course, are now coming back. At the time, in theory, cameras were contraband, especially at Manzanar, which was inside the exclusion zone. So in theory, nobody had cameras besides, you know, somebody like Francis Stewart, who went there on Memorial Day 70 years ago. Many of the photographs are from this day, or right around here 70 years ago. But there were cameras, you know, maybe as time went on and as belongings got sent up from storage. And so one of the delights of this book was a chance to publish photos that hadn't yet been seen. The cover photo by Katsumi Taniguchi, and those are newly shared with the public, and they are housed at Manzanar as part of the National Park Service.
Yeah. We're talking with Heather C. Lindquist, the editor of the book Children of Manzanar, and the photographs are just hard to describe, Heather. This is radio. Unfortunately, we can't really do justice. But tell us let's see, from 1942 to 45, more than 10,000 people, including 3,700 infants, toddlers, children, and teens, mm-hmm. Called Manzanar home. They were called assembly centers. It's a euphemism, of course. What do you think the children in these photos show us about the human spirit? And please, if you can, give us some examples as best you can on the radio.
That's
a challenge for you. It's so hard to describe these beautiful children.
It is so hard to describe. And I think it is just the gamut of joy and unbearable loneliness and isolation in some of them, and then a real sense of community coming together in others, and creativity. Many of the photos that were taken 70 years ago, almost today, by Francis Stewart, who was, of course, an amazing photographer, just show kids lost in a crowd and preoccupied with maybe playing marbles or picking up a little rock or, you know, something in the soil. And the older kids are trying to get on with their lives. They're making friends, and they're going to school, and they're wondering what the heck they're going to do. And, of course, the event that cleaved the families and the community so terribly was this, if we won't have time to get into it, but the loyalty oath, which was an attempt to prepare the Selective Service for men and women to serve in the military by determining loyalty. But it was given to Issei, who weren't able to become citizens at the time. And so there was initial questions that asked them to forswear loyalty to the emperor. But if they did that, they would be men without a country. And so this very devastating document caused a lot of division within families and within the community. And so Manzanar experienced multiple relocations. There was the relocation to Tule Lake, which was an ultimate outcome of the loyalty oath. There were kids saying, you know, I've got to get on with my life. Bye, Mom and Dad. I'm going to resettle sooner in the Midwest. Maybe I'll go to Swarthmore. Maybe I'll get into college. Maybe I'll get a job. There were men and women who did go into the military. There were some temporary work furloughs. And then the others, the Bainbridge Islanders I mentioned earlier, were able to go to, I believe it was Minidoka, where more people from the Seattle area went. So it was multiple ruptures and dislocations. And despite all this, we have photos of joy and incredible coming together.
Yes. The camp was run by staff members of the WRA. Mm-hmm. They had separate quarters that were painted white, whereas the people who had been taken there lived in tar paper shacks.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering about those approximately 200 American citizens that did take jobs there when they were better paying jobs elsewhere in the country because of the war effort. Were some of them sympathetic?
Absolutely. And this is one of the astonishing things that it was Malcolm who said, books are not finished, they're abandoned.
You just
have to put paper and pencil down. But one of the storylines that would be so incredible to know more about is, who were these women? And at Pilgrimage this year, I had the privilege of meeting a niece of a woman who was working with social services, and she absolutely felt a call to go and help out. She absolutely did. And I've heard, and I haven't yet documented this, that a number of Quakers and people who had a conscientious objection sort of orientation were drawn to help out. And so it isn't, you know, just it isn't black and white, as you say, despite the colors of the houses. And the children, we do have a small section of the children of some of the Caucasian, as they were called, workers.
I'm looking at one of the photos now.
Yes.
With the dog.
Yes, the dog. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And there was this tension and a separation, and yet they did play together. And So the story of the people who worked there, some of that is captured in oral histories. In fact, Art Williams, his name comes up in some of the captions there. There's a great oral history with him in the collection. And it's a very, and Ralph Merritt was the one who decided to let Toyo Miyatake, be the official camp photographer. And his, I believe, grandson showed up at Manzanar Pilgrimage. And he was also partly responsible for Ansel Adams coming to take photographs. So it shows this incredible range of human behavior and human potential, I think.
Of course, the children were involved in the school, in the hospitals when it needed to be. There was also a toy loan library. All of these things were interesting to me. Do you have anything specific you'd like to say about the schools, the hospitals, or the toy loan library?
Well, with you, I found the hospital school to be an incredibly moving little story. And I have to say there was something, both the hospital school and then the children's village at Manzanar was incredibly unique, because any child in foster care who maybe was an orphan by one or both parents, or was in the foster care system, they were all, no matter where they were on the West Coast, they all went to Manzanar. And that is somehow the poignancy just doubles up when I think about the children's village at Manzanar. And many of these photographs are here because Lillian Matsumoto, who ran the children's village with her husband, is still with us and provided these photos. And it's that's an incredibly poignant one for me. I think it's also the birthdays, the baby photos. You know, there was a mention in one of the camp, I think it was they had a camp administration system with block leaders. The block was the kind of basic unit or neighborhood, and it was the barracks, a number of barracks and rec hall and mess hall and laundry and so forth. And the block managers were sort of responsible for communicating with the WRA on administrative issues. And at one point, they just demanded, there's so many babies, we need to have a photographer. We need somebody who can record these birds coming along. And so we have a spread of baby photos, which really takes my heart.
Yeah. We're talking with Heather Lindquist. The name of the book is Children of Manzanar. It's published by Heyday Press, available in any good local bookstore. Are you going to be doing any events, or is that already done?
Many of them are done, although I'm delighted to say I'm going to be at a Terminal Island picnic coming up on June 10th.
That's down in Southern California.
Yes, down here. Yeah. Down toward, not in San Pedro, but in Orange County. And I'm delighted to be doing that. And there's an event coming up with the Minidoka group that I won't be able to make, but other people from Manzanar, from the park, will be there. June 21, sort of dedicated to civil liberties symposium, which I wish I could get to, but we can't do it all.
Yeah.
So June 10th, Terminal Island.
Mm-hmm. Well, you clearly have a strong emotional connection to this work and that place and time. It's still accessible to people who want to go see it, I presume. How do they do that?
Well, yes, the Park Service site is open, you know, literally year-round. It's even open after dark. There's an auto tour. The Manzanar location is on the Eastern Sierra. It's off 395. So if folks are going to Mammoth or Death Valley, it's literally on the way to nowhere unless you're going to Mammoth or maybe taking 395. It is unbelievable experience. The whole camp, not the agricultural lands, but the main core camp lands are set aside. There's an auto tour. There's the auditorium that was actually built by the Japanese Americans who lived there and was functioned as the high school auditorium in the final 45 for the last graduating class is what houses the exhibits. And exhibits are now expanding to include what's called a block, what I mentioned before, and two barracks and a mess hall. And there's an online presence also. So if people just Google Manzanar National Historic Site, there's an online exhibit that's really phenomenal, includes oral history clips, includes photographs of some of the artifacts that have either been unearthed during archaeology or donated. And I encourage people to go.
Okay. Well, Heather Lindquist, thank you so much for joining us here on the radio today. I think your book is beautiful, and I hope a lot of people have a chance to look at it. So, again, thanks very much.